Now, back to the Jack and Tom Show on 1320 WILS.
Welcome back, Jack Ebling and Dave Benton. Jack and Tom Show, 1320 WILS. Very happy to welcome in, as we do each week at this time, Dr. John Braccio, Regional Psychological Services, Dr. John B., the Master of Assessments. Hello, John. How are you?
Well, very good. Always like talking to you and Dave, and also can hear you good, so things are good. Yeah, good show today, like always.
I want to get your assessment of George Steinbrenner, the boss, and now we have all these eulogies, and everyone's talking about what a cuddly teddy bear he was, forgetting what a jerk and an ass he was for most of his life. And I'm not saying that you don't give a guy credit for softening, mellowing, but he's got a long history of being pretty cruel to people.
Well, I guess, Jack, it's like many things. You have to judge a person on balance. Obviously, nobody is perfect, and certainly he was a bully, you know, and he could hold a grudge and hold it for many years, and he died with various grudges, as we know.
Yeah.
On the other hand, he could be caring. He was certainly committed to the community. He, you know, he kind of grew up almost like we'll call it Woody Hayes, is symbolic. Yeah, he spent a year with him, and Woody could do all those things too, actually. So he was a great man. There's no question in terms of achievements, in terms of what he did and how good he could be. On the other hand, he was petty and a bully. I guess maybe like many people that achieve what the world calls great things, they have this dual personality. They compete so hard. They want to win so much and achieve so much that they will walk over, step on people on their way up, their way around life.
Yeah, but why do people do that? Not him, but why do people do kind of like what happened with Bob Probert, where all of a sudden he passed away and everybody was talking about what an amazing person he was and temporarily forgot about all the trouble that he got into? Why do people, when people die, all of a sudden just project them as the most amazing person that ever lived?
Well, I think what happens, death kind of rules things out, Dave, and I think when you're dead, people then, they don't have to deal with you anymore, and they often will look for the good in you, and maybe that's a good part of human nature, because if we just focus on the negative of somebody who did do a lot of good things also, I might add, it can be more destructive. It's kind of the final tabulation. I'm going to give you a crazy ancient story. There's a fellow named William Hazlitt. When Lord Byron died, he had written all these quite horrible things about him, but then after he got word that he died, he commented, he said, well, death kind of equals everything else, so we wouldn't change things, warts and all, but we must remember there was great achievement here, and maybe that's the epitaph, the achievement and not the negative. And I think in the case of Steinbrenner, it's the same thing. Like Jack will tell you the story, if he hasn't, in terms of when he spent time talking to him, when he was a young reporter, kind of meeting, and he spent time talking. When Izzo was coaching, just looking, observing can be helpful. And he probably helped someone whose lawnmower wasn't working out on the lawn. But on the other hand, he could be mad at a guy like Torrey, a coach, and a comrade, a competitor, somebody, and then he would never get over his anger. I just think death has a way of equaling out, and people remember the good. George Halas is an example.
Right.
Woody Hayes is an example. Even Bo Schembechler, people that did maybe nothing quite like a Steinbrenner, but people that did things, and then we want to just find the good in what they did. And that's probably healthy for everybody.
You know, he had one of the great lines of all time, George Steinbrenner, and he was being interviewed by Ira Burko of the New York Times. And Ira said, you know, you do all these things for Sloan Kettering Cancer Center and all these organizations that you help behind the scenes. And then in public, you're such a jerk and you inflict so much pain on people. And George Steinbrenner said, yeah, but I also inflict a lot of joy. And I've never heard that term before about inflicting joy, but only Steinbrenner's mind would work that way. And, you know, it's kind of like what the New York Times called truth in death, with their obits. Sometimes I wonder if Osama bin Laden died tomorrow, if we'd get a lot of tributes.
Well, you know, I'm not quite sure. On the other hand, there tends to be good in even the best of people, and it's a question of maybe ferreting it out, and often that is what happens, because I've noted over the years that some people that I found really were quite distasteful, but when they die, people will come forward and mention some of the good things that they did for them, and those are those moments that others might not know that can somewhat judge the person, and also some people that can be petty at people level can be very helpful to, like, the American Cancer Society, mm-hmm. some major group that's more nebulous, they see the good, but they can get very angry right. at an individual who might splash water on them as they're running by jogging. So life, yeah. people right. are complicated, and that's just what we have to accept.
John, we have been spending a lot of time talking about college football today, and the psychology of recruiting is always interesting. You think that Ohio State has the greatest recruiting advantage of any team in the country. Why is that?
Well, I really do. In fact, I was talking with my son-in-law, with my son. We were talking about this. And if you think of it, they have a state with like 12 million people to themselves. Anyone else, let's just go to Florida. You have Florida, you have Miami, you have Florida State, and then others, up-and-coming teams like Southern Florida, like FIU. You go to California, even if USC can rule, UCLA can kind of catch them. There, you've got four, you know, Division I teams right there in California. You go to Pennsylvania, you do have Pitt over there with Penn State. And here, here we have two schools, and probably Fritz Kreisler is probably still rolling over in his grave anger about Michigan State getting the Big Ten. But you have Ohio down there, and I was down to a wedding down there just recently, and I was amazed. This is in St. Henry, in Ohio. Dane Baldwin, a friend of the family, mm-hmm. his family, mm-hmm. he got married. And I've never seen anything like this Ohio State thing. I've never seen it in East Lansing, never seen it in Ann Arbor, where it's like a shrine. And the people there, really, it's kind of amazing. And I never really got a feel for what Ohio, and I don't want to generalize from a few trips that I've taken down here, but they have that state. Sure, Cincinnati gets some people. Sure, you have some MAC schools. Mm-hmm. But you have Ohio State from one end to the other end in a state that has 50 Division I players, if I can look at rivals, versus 25 in Michigan.
Right.
So it's I just can't think of another state that has that big of an advantage inherent if you have the right coach,
right.
which I think you do have with Trussell. And part of the fall of Michigan might be the rise of Trussell as much as problems in Ann Arbor.
Well, let's talk about another team in Ohio, the Cleveland Cavaliers. And Jack and I were talking about it earlier, and I would like you to break this down almost like it's a relationship. Tell us the recuperating process and how long it should take for somebody to get over a breakup, because this is, in my opinion, starting to get a little ridiculous.
Well, I think Jack talked on something. It's the way he left. If he had gone, you know, the way Shaq Lee, when he went to L.A. or went to Miami, you know, when he was moving, call it what you will, he left as a good Samaritan. You call a meeting, you say, you know, I love the community, I love the people here. It's just, I need a change. This is really what I want to do. Have a couple tears, call it what you will, and you leave. I think the way he turned it into this big to-do, that it made them feel that he just really just kind of shunned them and disrespected them. That's a town, it's like a Detroit.
Right.
It's an area where the sports team is very closely related. And LeBron is one of them. And
right.
I just feel the way it was done. I think if he had done it differently, it would have been totally different. I think Gilbert did go wacky on the thing, and I do realize pro. But I also think he was trying to support the community as well as himself.
And I think him being from Northeast Ohio made it worse, the fact that Cleveland has all this inadequacy anyway, the feelings of inferiority, because they haven't won anything since 1964. And, you know, Cleveland was a mistake by the lake. Every time you hear Cleveland, there's a joke associated with it.
Or Drew Carey, is like a joke.
Well,
so, you know.
You know, whatever the case may be. And even a television show, you know, with Cleveland, well, there's some underlying inadequacy there. So when you think about this, I don't think this is going to end for a long time, Dave. And I certainly don't think it is either. It's definitely not going to end until there's closure. And you're not going to have closure until LeBron James comes back to Cleveland. Now, if he comes back and plays in Quicken Arena, then that's going to be the toughest ticket in the history of Cleveland to get. And some people have speculated, and John, I want to get your take on this very quickly because I think this is where it gets dangerous. Did you see the movie The Fan with Robert De Niro?
You know, I did.
And some people think that this could happen in Cleveland and that LeBron James' family could be physically injured when he comes back to town.
Well, I would certainly hope not. I do feel that he could have a different interview. Now, I heard an interview where he was talking on ESPN, and if you know, I don't want to put words in his mouth, but it was almost like this was really about me. This is why I didn't say anything for a while. And I think that you have to realize when you're in that role, you are a representative of a community, particularly with the type of money that you're getting. I think that is a potential danger. I would still like him to come forward and just say, you know, it just is something I wanted to do. I really love the community. They love me. I feel bad.
Right.
I think that would be a good thing to do. Showing up in South Beach and partying and all these type things. He can do what he wants. He is an independent person. I realize that. But there are feelings here. I would certainly hope people would not carry it to that extreme. But I do realize when it comes to sports,
people
get crazy. We see it maybe in soccer where people stampede each other. But, yeah, I think it's something at least I would, you know, I would certainly keep a head on, think about.
Sure.
And if we can believe Rodriguez, he was saying there were threats to his family when you know, he left.
Yeah, there were probably threats to his family by the Michigan fans, too, wanting him to go back. That's some of them, too.
But
it will be after he loses to Michigan State again.
Well, that's true, but I do believe that Cleveland situation with LeBron is a unique kind of a situation. And I hope it can work out. I'd still like to see him, in spite of all the rights he has, as Mark mentioned before, he can kind of come and go as he pleases. I still would like him to make a peaceful kind of a statement to Cleveland and kind of ease the feelings.
Hey, John, thanks so much. I appreciate it. As always, we'll talk to you Tuesday.
Always a pleasure, guys.
All right. We'll be back with more. Jack and Dave here, the Jack and Tom Show, 1320 WILS.